introduce myself and my co-speakers. So I'm Sanjay Narang. I'm Cloud Solution Architect with Microsoft. One of my main work is to ensure all my customers who do work on Azure, then who have a successful architectures. I spent years in SharePoint, and now I've dived in Azure. With me, I have speakers from Infosys, Shweta, and Lynn, who is just walking in. We have two sessions to cover, and we have a short of time. So what I would suggest is, if you can hold on to your questions till the end, it will give two benefits. One, we have some giveaway in terms of bags and books searching. So, and other rooms, please wait. I mean, I would come to the other rooms also if there are any questions here. So, let's start. So what we're going to cover today is, as Azure is picking up, right, most of the people want to see what applications I can move, and SharePoint is one of the most popular applications in enterprises, and they want to move to cloud. But is there enough reasoning behind that? Why should we move? So that's what we look at. If you've decided to move your SharePoint to Azure, what kind of an architecture you need to look at? What kind of consideration you need to have? There are a few concepts that were never existed in on-premise environment. They were only in Azure. So we will look into that, what are those things. And when you move into Azure, is that just that VM that you will use? Actually, you can have much more. You have Azure provides much more services, which you can club with a SharePoint to give much more business features to your users. And then we will actually look into Infosys.com, what was the architecture, what were the challenges they faced, and how it went up. So let's look at why SharePoint and Azure. So if you look at what are the cloud options, we have on-premise, we have an infrastructure as a service, we have a platform as a service, and we have a software as a service. Okay. SharePoint is not having any option in platform as a service. So we have three options here. And SaaS is our Office 365 platform. So primarily it is a trade-off between cost and control. SaaS is the most cost-effective way. You don't have to worry about patching, which is Office 365. You don't have to worry about patching, upgrades, and all things. That it's much cheaper, some dollars per user. But you don't have controls on servers. You cannot write a server-side code on that. Whereas on on-premise, you have the full environment, and you can run any kind of solutions there. However, if you want to run those kind of solutions and you want to have that kind of control, and you still want to take the benefit of cloud, the path is away, Azure is the way or IaaS is the way, and that's what we're going to cover today. So let's see what is our positioning. Actually, you can go ahead and put SharePoint and can create any kind of workload there. But what, as Microsoft, we recommend is look at Azure from these scenarios. One is dev and test. Look at, if you're using SharePoint 2013, people who work on SharePoint, you need a 16 GB RAM and maybe more than one core of the VMs for having that kind of this thing. Now, giving this kind of desktop to all the developers is not easy, right? So Azure comes in very effectively there, that you can actually spin up machines there and give them the remote desktop. And when it's a testing environment, right, you need to have test farms set up, and that only for short duration, not for the whole duration of the project, you can use Azure. Disaster recovery. You have on-premise farm. If you need to have a disaster recovery and geo-redundancy, you don't want to invest in another real estate, you don't want to invest in another hardware, that's what you will do, you can do the disaster recovery in Azure. Internet sites. When I'm saying internet sites, it's sites like Microsoft.com, Infosys.com, Accenture.com, HP.com. This feature is not available in Office 365. So if you want to have this, Azure is the way to go. If you're using Office 365 and you still want to write some code, there's something called SharePoint apps. Now, SharePoint apps do not get installed within SharePoint. So you need to have a separate VMs, separate servers for that. Those servers, you can actually put it in Azure while you're using Office 365. And generally, if you're using Office 365, you might be using GetSync, you might be using ADFS. You can, again, put those servers in Azure so that your hardware base in on-premise doesn't increase. Now, what you're saying is for collaboration and intranet environments, look at Office 365 as your first choice. Okay? Because most of the features that you need there is available at a much lesser cost. In case it doesn't meet your requirements, look at on-premise environment. First, we say that look at a standard on-premise environment, which is something which we call as a product line architecture, which is available which is a standard prescriptive guidance. If that doesn't meet your requirement, you look at a customized farm environment. And if that doesn't, if you're looking at some other cloud providers, what we're saying is, then look at Azure, because the support that you get on SharePoint from Microsoft is much more integrated in Azure. For example, you can put up your farm in AWS, but Microsoft does not support a SharePoint farm on AWS. So if you have got into a bug or something, you raise a support case with Microsoft, Microsoft will not entertain that. Now, this situation of the recommendation is going to change very soon. Why we were not recommending collaboration scenarios on Azure was because SharePoint is a highly IOPS intensive application, storage IOPS, right? And currently we have some limits on IOPS. However, we have already released a feature called premium storage in which you can get up to 50,000 IOPS, right? We saw in the keynote also. Once that comes, you can have any kind of workload on SharePoint on Azure. So, why Azure for SharePoint, right? Now, few things as I said, right? If you have internet sites, solution is not there in Office 365, go with it. Full trust solutions, Office 365 can't do this, go for Azure. Another thing is fast provisioning. I would like to highlight, people who have deployed SharePoint farms, they would know it can take 1 week, or maybe a couple of weeks, or maybe 3 weeks, sometimes if there's a, if it's complex. Now, you can actually spin up a SharePoint farm with full high availability and all the best practices followed from a SharePoint perspective as well as from Azure perspective in a couple of minutes. So you go to Azure new portal, the preview portal, there is a template which is available called SharePoint. There's an option called use high availability, you can use that and that's what you do. And all others that you've been seeing since morning and many other things, what are all those features? Like fast, chat per minute, VNets, traffic manager, and all those things are available. Yeah. Now, having said that, let's move on to, if you're going to having SharePoint, what should an architecture look like? So first thing I need to decide is which region I need to put my SharePoint farm. Mostly the decision is based on where your users. If you are an India-based company and you are doing a SharePoint for your employees, maybe the closest region is Singapore. Now we've announced that you can actually have in Pune also in a couple of months, later this year. So after you decide the region, you generally need to have a VNet. VNet is an address space so that all the VMs get created in that. Once you have a VNet, you should define an affinity group to ensure that all the VMs that you create are in close proximity of each other so that latency, server-to-server latency is much lesser. Once you do this, you need to define the cloud services. Now, cloud services are just containers, as you know. Inside the cloud services, you have virtual machines. Now, so you have virtual machines for all the different roles. I've shown front-end app services, domain controllers, database servers. Now, it's very important to note that in a public cloud, your VMs can go down at any point of time, right? When we do patch management or maintenance at the host server can get rebooted, your VM also can get rebooted. You need to ensure from your application perspective that it is highly available so that it doesn't impact your application, you don't have the downtime. For that, what you need to do is, you need to ensure all the VMs in a particular role are in an availability set. Okay? Now, availability set would ensure that all the VMs in that particular availability set don't go down at the same time. But is that good enough for high availability? It's not for some roles. For example, the clients can still keep connecting to a VM which has gone down. For that, you need to have another thing. For example, which for web servers, that is a load balancer. You can use actually Azure load balancer here, which comes free for web servers. For database servers, you can actually have SQL Server always on with a listener. Now, listener, again, is provided based on Azure load balancer. Now, we have two kind of load balancers now. One is external load balancer, one is internal load balancer. For a SQL Server, most of the features, only web servers and application servers are accessing it. No user is accessing SQL Server. So there's no need to have an external load balancer here. You can actually have internal load balancer. But for web servers, if you're exposing the web servers to end users, they need to come from internet, you need to have an external load balancer. There are some roles, for example, domain controller. They do their own synchronization. They don't need anything. App servers of SharePoint. SharePoint does the load balancing between them, so you don't need to do this. So, two things, availability set and another feature to do the high availability. Let's double click on some of those features. Now, let us say you have an on-premise environment. You already have monitoring like SCOM, you already have patching SSCM, you already have a domain, and you want to extend that infrastructure, and you want to ensure that same SCOM as the same environment actually monitors and maintains my environment in Azure. For doing that, you need to extend your network, and what you do is you either create a site-to-site VPN or an express route. So that is what you do. Another thing what you need to decide is which domain I would need. SharePoint needs a domain controller, and ideally it should be a local domain controller, and it needs a domain. So you can extend your on-premise domain to Azure, have another domain controller there, with which things becomes much simpler. Your SCOM, SSCM, even authentication keep working the same way it was working on on-premises, just a lift and shift. But some companies don't prefer to have their Active Directory on Azure. In that case, you have an option, you can actually go with a totally different domain controller in Azure, and for authentication, you can use something like ADFS. Moving further. So coming to cloud services, right? Generally, you will have a cloud service for each role. But for a SharePoint, if you want to do a little simpler, you should at least should have three cloud services, one for domain controllers, one for all SharePoint servers, and one for database servers. One thing that you need to ensure is database server cloud service must be a different cloud service than SharePoint servers, because the way the always-on listener is implemented, the VMs from the same cloud service cannot connect to that listener. So that's why. Another thing I want to highlight about the listener is, in on-premise environment, you can have multiple listeners for one in one server and have multiple availability groups. And Azure, in Azure, you can have only one listener. So that's an important thing to note. Coming to availability sets, again, this is from high availability perspective. You don't have to worry about fault domains, update domains. You just say my VMs are in availability set, and Azure will take care of fault domains and update domains. One thing which I didn't highlight, this has come recently, is network security groups. Now, when you have farms in on-premise environment, you have DMZ kind of environment. Okay, the extended topologies, you have a DMZ where you have much lesser policies in DMZ, but much stricter policies there. And if you want to have that kind of infrastructure or networking infrastructure within Azure, now that is possible, and NSD makes that possible, so you can have that. So NSD basically gives you an options like you can have source IP range, source port, destination IP range, destination port, and you can show what is allowed from this to this. Some companies have a policy that from production servers they do not allow outbound internet access. They want to restrict, that also can be done through network security groups. SharePoint depends heavily on SQL Server, so the performance of SQL Server is very important. So there are a lot of things which you need to take care of. These two white papers which are written at the bottom actually cover them in much detail, but a few things I wanted to highlight in this session. Storage account and SQL VMs, they must be in the same region, preferably in the same affinity group. DR through SQL capability like log shipping or always on, you actually need not actually disable geo replication of Azure, which you get by default. It gets you more IOPS. Separate your data and log IOPS. And for having more IOPS, try the disks. Today, with the standard storage, per disk you get about 500 IOPS maximum. You might get actually lesser based on multiple other factors. So if you need more than that, what you can do is you can create a storage space and attach multiple disks to that. With D14 kind of VM, you can actually attach 32 disks. So you can get 32 into 500 IOPS this thing. Now, another recommendation, either use D-Series or a G-Series VM for SQL Server. That's actually my personal recommendation. It's not a Microsoft Visual recommendation based on my experience. The reason is, this series, they give you 60% faster CPU than A-Series this thing, and it comes with local temporary drive as a local SSD. Now, that's a temporary drive. So do not install, do not keep any application data, do not install your SharePoint on the drive. However, what you can do is for SQL Server, you can keep your tempdb and bufferpool extensions on that to boost your performance. And whenever premium storage is up, you can actually use SSD disk even for the data disk. Okay, so with that, let's see what other services that you can use from Azure. Now, many of the customers are already Office 365 customers. So they will already have Azure Active Directory which they are using. If you're using that and you're putting your SharePoint farm on Azure, you can actually use the same Active Directory for your Azure SharePoint authentication. You don't have to do much extra. Two main things to consider here. Azure Active Directory doesn't allow you to join VMs to that. So you still need to have a domain controller for that purpose. And there's no out-of-the-box way to do a user-profile sync with Azure Directory. So if you are using that feature, either go with a custom way or don't have the service in Azure. And then there is a feature called Traffic Manager. Now, Traffic Manager is more of a DNS router, which gives you a DNS capability. Like, for example, if you have two farms in two different geos, one in the US and one in Europe, and you want to do, you can do multiple things. You can configure it in an active passive way, that till the US farm is up, all the requests will go to US farm, and only when this goes down, that it will start routing the request to the Europe transparently. Or you can actually configure it in the round-robin model, or you can actually configure it in performance mode, in which all the users who are closer to the US farm will go to US farm, and all the users who are closer to Europe farm, they will go to Europe farm. So there it gives you different capabilities and you know, works very well. Then there is a feature called Azure Site Recovery. Now this, if you have to do a DR of a SharePoint farm the traditional way, the SharePoint way, you have to actually install and deploy full-fledged SharePoint farm in the DR location. You'll have to set up log shipping or always on, and a lot of other things. It becomes really complex. With ASR, you can actually do a DR in a push button kind of a scenario. You can actually do a testing also with a push button. One caveat, this feature is already available, but just for SharePoint, it's under testing and it will come very soon. So it's not available today. You can use CDN, which is our content delivery network, for static file caching. For load testing, generally people who do load testing, they will know that just to set up a rig with multiple controller and agents, it can take a long time and it requires a lot of VMs. So, and what you can do, you can Visual Studio Online. With Visual Studio Online, what you do is, you simply define number of users that I want to load my application, these number of users, and this is my web test or a load test, and you're ready to go without any setup through Visual Studio Online. And that's another Azure service. Media services. We have a very solid live streaming as well as the video on demand platform for streaming. And if you have a requirement like Enterprise YouTube or any other video solution that you want to build, there's one solution is Office 365 Video, but if you want to customize that, you can use media services in the back end and put SharePoint on the front end. That you can do. And then we do a log analysis. Analytics we saw in the previous session, the analysis. So if you do like analytics, like who are the users who are coming more, what are the slow pages, what is the page time, all that IS log has, but it requires a lot of scripting and all to get this or some special tools. Now you can use HD Insight, which is Hadoop as a service on Azure, to do that kind of log analysis. With that, I finish the first part with SharePoint and Azure, and I invite Shweta to continue on infosys.com.
Because these were hosted data centers, we did not have direct connectivity from our corporate network, and we were only connected through FTP. The publishing process itself was centralized, and our authoring form was in India, because most of our authors at that time were based out of India, and our customers were in US, most of our customers. So that's why our data centers were in US. And from this centralized publishing, from this centralized authoring form, we used to do the publishing to both the primary and secondary setups in US, and it was a pretty complicated process, which I'll explain. Yes, Akamai was acting as a traffic manager, CDN, and load balancer, and the site was built on responsive web design, so we were able to cater to requests coming from different devices, different form factors, but because it was responsive in nature, that's why we were sending We did not have the capability to differentiate whether a request was coming from a mobile device or from a desktop. So because of that limitation, we were sending the same payload to each and every request, and which will get then processed on the client side. So the experience was not great for the users. So primary issues with this setup or the architecture was the publishing process itself was multi-step, time-consuming, and error prone. Because the way it used to work was authors will author the content on the India authoring setup, and from there we would have a custom utility to export the content. Because we did not have direct connectivity to the production setup, we could not use the out-of-box content deployment jobs. So we had these custom utilities. And then over FTP channel, we would transfer that export file onto the US setup, and over there again we would have other utility to import the content. So it was pretty complicated and time-consuming process. Hardware was getting outdated, and that meant that we had to look at renewed the infrastructure investment. And as I mentioned, experience for mobile users were not great, and MOS 2007 was getting out of mainstream support. So this is the high-level architecture of then onto my site. You can see there are primarily four farms, but major one being authoring farm, which is in India, and then primary farm in primary data center in US, and other secondary farm, which is a DR farm, in the secondary data center in US. And you can see the content deployment custom job happens over FTP, and Akamai is over there acting as a GTM. CDN, and also providing Site Shield, which is a layer of security that probably I'll cover later. So this is where we are after our migration to Azure is complete. It's a SharePoint 2013 based site now, and it is running out of two geo-distributed Azure data centers. These data centers are really in two different continents to provide geo-redundancy. We are utilizing SharePoint 2013 out-of-box features for, which are meant for internet-facing sites, primarily being a search engine optimization feature which provides friendly URLs or the short URLs, and inbuilt multi-device support through something called device channels. So with this device channel feature, we are now able to identify a particular request, whether it is coming from a mobile device or from a tablet or from a, you know, we can actually bucket and then optimize our payload and or take necessary actions on the server, and you know, say that I want to show different content to mobile user because I have limited screen space or real estate. So I can take all that call now, and I can optimize my payload. So this has been achieved through out-of-box device channels, and now the site is responsive as well as adaptive, because we are now only bucketing in three or four categories, but the number of devices just keep growing every day, right? So responsive is still very much required, and it is there. And the whole content publishing process is now single click. The content authoring happens on the live setup itself. We don't have a parallel India production farm, India authoring farm anymore. So you authors just go to the authoring site, which is running on the same hardware in the Azure data centers itself. And it goes through an approval process, and with the single click, it is published, and the content is available on the live site. So I'll just show you the high-level architecture of the internet or the public-facing site. I'll not be covering the authoring site itself. So we have two farms, farm one being the primary one and farm two being the failover farm. So these are in active-passive mode. And farm one is based out of, is hosted in Azure region one, and farm two is in Azure region two. And most of the components that you are seeing over there, though you may not be able to see because of the clarity of the content itself, but different layers like web servers, the app servers, the database servers, all are configured with high availability, like Sanjay mentioned in a couple of the slides before. So they are in their own availability set, they are in their own cloud services, and wherever required, we have external load balancer. For example, on the web front-end servers itself, we have external load balancer, and then also on the SQL, We have configured always on availability group, so that is also configured with the external load balancer. Akamai is again the traffic manager, and it keeps polling both the setup, primary and secondary, and it takes a call. So as far as it is getting a response from the primary setup, it keeps forwarding all the traffic or the request to the primary setup. But if for some reason it is not able to reach the primary setup, or because of network connectivity or the infrastructure itself not being available or the farm not being available, it starts diverting the traffic to the secondary side. Now, when we went live maybe about 9 months back, at that time, Azure did not have capability of connecting two different regions, or these two farms were not connected. There was no direct connectivity, and hence, because of that limitation, we could not, there was no out-of-box mechanism to, you know, sync content from primary to the secondary. So while authoring was happening on the primary setup, we had to also replicate the content onto the secondary side or the DR side. So for just in case, whenever there is a scenario where the traffic has to shift to the secondary side, my content should be as fresh as possible, right? And so while the primary farm SQL was configured with always on, but on the secondary side, I did not have the connectivity. I could not use always on secondary side with async replica. And that's why we had all those, we had lots of custom jobs which were taking care of syncing the content. So these jobs were actually taking the T-log backups in the primary, copying onto the block storage, then copying block to block, block copying to the secondary side, and then finally restoring those blocks onto the secondary side. That's how the data sync was happening. So these were fairly complicated steps, and if one has to, there's a sequence of steps that had to be executed, and there were a lot of moving pieces. It's a pretty complicated architecture. Then we have the Akamai Sideshield layer. So Sideshield is nothing but basically our origins infos.com SharePoint servers can only be reached through Sideshield servers. So our web front end load balancer has been it has some ACL setup, and those ACLs are only the IPs of Akamai Sideshield servers. And then outermost layer is the Akamai Edge Network, which is nothing but the continuity network or the CDN. The failover architecture is what I've just explained. So Akamai GTM, which keeps pulling both the setups and takes call when to failover. Because of no side-to-side connectivity between the two, we have the custom jobs. And again, because of the same limitation, two farms they have their own domains, and data sync is happening through Azure Blob Storage. We also have some other custom utility for DNS lookup, which keeps checking if Akamai is pointing to the primary or to the secondary, because there were no direct triggers that would be sent from Akamai. So this guy was just looking at which one is primary at this moment, and then takes the necessary actions based on that. Some more details on architecture. So we had enabled the same sign-on, single sign-on for authors through federation with compromise ADFS. High availability for every infrastructure component was set up in both the setups, and SQL 2012 always on was configured for SQL HA. And Akamai services were used for device detection and bucketing. So Akamai has a database where they can identify whether a particular request is coming from what device, and then they can bucket and tell us this is coming from mobile or tablet, and we can optimize the payload. Now, this was the architecture 9 months back because of certain constraints that were there at Azure. But since then, there have been a lot of new features, new announcements which have happened, and now we are working on leveraging those new features to simplify the architecture to reduce the moving pieces. And now we have VNet to VNet connectivity between two Azure regions. So what that means is now we can have single AD domain across the two regions, which also means that now I can enable SQL always on async replication to the secondary side, right? And which means I can get rid of all those custom jobs or the moving pieces. Also, when we had gone live at that time, SQL AG listener required an external load balancer. Or at that time, only external load balancer was available. But now internal load balancer is also available. So we are planning to configure our AG listener with the virtual IP of the internal load balancer instead of the cloud service IP. We also have express routes that will be set up between Infos data center and Azure data center, and we will be using that to also enable authoring site through this itself, and traffic for authoring will not be going over internet to enable extra security. And we have NSG for subnet level isolation. So if this is the current architecture, which was when we went live 9 months back, if I have to show you how we are going to change with the new features coming in, there's the VNet to VNet connectivity. With that coming in, all the custom jobs go out of the solution. We don't need them anymore, and that simplifies the architecture. We have the AG group set up between the two instances across the regions, and the single domain, which is now configured across the two farms. And there is express route, which will be set up between Infosys and Azure Data Centers, and that will be used for authoring. So with that, I request my colleague Lynn to take over, and maybe can we take the questions towards the end? Because we are really running short. So Lynn will talk about the security considerations and some of the key challenges that we have faced.
Thanks, Shara. Myself, Ray. I know it's a very heavy session after the lunch. Okay, I will take just 5 minutes of yours and we'll open up for questions. So, hope I'm audible. Okay, so what we have done is like we have covered this all topics, like Shweta just covered the topics. We have bucketed into a different systems purely from security standpoint. Because when you go to cloud, security becomes paramount of importance. You have to make sure that security is taken care of. So the first line item on is that we have made sure the origin service, that's our VMs. Our VMs only is accessible from the Akamai sideshare servers. So all the traffic comes through the Akamai sideshare servers actually, and nobody hits the VMs directly. So that's the case with the load balancer also. We have, as Shweta showed, we are using the public load balancer. That's a public encrypted load balancer. If you know the name of the load balancer, you can access the load balancer directly bypassing the Akamai sideshare servers, for which we have put ACS on the load balancer. And we are using WAF actually. So we wanted to protect our incoming traffic so that no malicious content comes in the HTTP payload. So we have put Akamai Web Application Firewall which checks the incoming traffic that works in the layer 7 and alert us if there's a malicious content coming in and it drops. Fourth point I just want to touch upon is like we are using Friend Micro DSM. Okay, this is for segregation of tiers. Basically, the app, the web, the management, the gated tiers has been segregated, and we make sure all the traffic is contained in the tiers, and only the required traffic goes between the tiers. And we are using IPS capability of Friend Micro to protect our technology. Basically, the software which is run on the VMs like SharePoint, SQL, or the AD, etc. And we also, what we've done is like we have made sure the authoring URL is accessed separately. We have the AMPs in it, so that the authoring is through a different route. It's not through a normal route the end users comes in. That an authoring site is only accessible from the Infosys network. It's not accessible publicly. Okay, so all the traffic from the Infosys network is routed to WAN into using the S2S VPN into my site. Public endpoints are disabled for all VMs. As you may be aware, like when you spawn a VM in Azure, there will be two endpoints by default, public endpoints by default. Semantic antivirus and anti-malware for VMs actually. So this is to protect any antivirus inside the VMs itself. On top of it, we have Trend Micro Portal Protect for SharePoint. You might be thinking, if you have semantic antivirus in your VMs, why do you want Trend Micro Portal Protect? So as you are aware, actually, when you upload a content into a SharePoint site, especially for us from the authoring side, when you upload a content into authoring, the content sits in the memory, in the app or the web. web servers and guest to. And it stores as a blob in the SQL Server. So in the memory, semantic takes some amount of time to scan in memory and detect for viruses. But before that, if guess is stored into the blob, then the viruses get stored into my database. To make sure that no viruses gets into the database, we have Trend Micro to protect for SharePoint for the uploads feature. These are the key issues. Certain issues might not be relevant now, actually, because we have no features in Azure. I'll tell you what is relevant, what's not relevant. So when we went live 9 months back, actually, as well as code, we didn't have connectivity between the Azure regions. Actually, we had two regions, and there was no connectivity, and we had to write a lot of custom data replication jobs. It is not one job; it's a series of jobs which runs to take care of the data which copied from the VM to the blob, make sure the encryption is running well, as you all know, blob is available, and copy to the VM back and restore the data. And this has to be done by actually. And it was very, very challenging. Okay? And another limit which we had is on the limit of the ACLs in the Azure Load Balancer. As I said earlier, we have put ACLs in the Azure Load Balancer because the Azure Load Balancer is what the URLs, the IP is publicly available. And we have hard limit on 50 rules on the Azure Load Balancer. The problem is when you have Akamai and Azure combination, Akamai has 900 odd IP ranges for the Sidechain servers. You have to club all these IP ranges into a 50 bucket and make sure that that it is within the 50 to 50 ACL limit. But however, having said that, there are some which has built over. So what we have put is additional role base on my VMs using the Trend Micro DSM to check whether any other traffic is coming from any other IPs. Another challenge is on the SIEM. SIEM stands for Security Incident and Event Management. So, as you know, Azure portal doesn't have a feature where you can export logs automatically. We have to write custom scripts which exports the logs, okay, into our SIEM servers and correlate the events basically. Another thing is the lack of perimeter firewall. On-prem, when we do architecture for on-prem, there is always a perimeter firewall for the public system files, and there's a NIPS. But in this case, the DDoS and the perimeter controls are taken care of by Microsoft, actually. But on and about that, what we have done is, we have done Trend Micro DSM, which provides the firewall IPS capability. Yeah. In this, actually, I just want to stress that, actually, instead of Akamai CDN, you can use Azure CDN, which is available now. When we went live, the CDN reaches was very, very less, actually. We had only 20 places, basically, locations in the world, and while Akamai had 155 servers across the globe. Now, Microsoft has cached up a lot they can use. One thing when you use CDN is, make sure the content which are caching the CDN is anonymous in nature, because CDN doesn't have authentication. So if you're caching some authentic content, anybody is going to see the content. That's not a best practice. As for the load balancer also, we have the internal facing load balancer now for the SQL Server especially, and even for the authoring side, we can use the internal load balancer. And for the SIEM piece, there's a new feature which is coming in Azure also for the SIEM. And this is the last slide. Sorry. The results. We have significant reduction in TCO, 40 to 50% of reduction in TCO. And we had an upfront cost reduction, that is because of CapEx getting converted to OpEx. It was huge cost savings which we had. And we had this on-demand scalability feature, which was very good, very good feature. And this, because Odoo Quantum results, our hits on the public website is more, actually, and the amount of time is less. So that actually gives us scalability. Faster provisioning of infrastructure is very, very one thing which we used, and we used scripts to do provisioning, partial scripts for provisioning actually. So what we did is, even for testing purposes, we done on the Azure Cloud. So the infos.com was tested on the Azure Cloud. And as Sanjay told, like instead of using Studio Online, we used the rig on the Azure itself, but we created our rig using our scripts. And the time to publish Kotlin is reduced about 50%. This is because of the re-engineering what we did from the publishing process itself. And obviously we had better performance because we used a lot of out-of-the-box features of SharePoint, as well as we have reduced the payload, which is for the mobile devices. That's it. Some handy references, and I will open the floor.
Okay, so thank you guys. So I just, before we open the club, this kind of details of a real life website, I've done multiple sessions across various conferences. You would have never had it. So these two people are there from Infosys, not from Microsoft. So ask any question that you want to ask them. Okay. And I have three bags and Sachin book to give away. It'll go best question, I will decide which is the best question. Go ahead. Please go start. So SharePoint on Azure is not different from SharePoint on-premise. So whatever is supported, it is supported. You, by default, it has Windows, XAML, and FBA. And through XAML, you can actually do Facebook and all that. You can do this thing. Okay. I'll decide if that's a good question. It will go off sometime. Yeah?
Three questions. The first one on scalability. What is the farm size that SharePoint supports? The second one on migration. What I wanted to understand, it's good to see the values that you bring. How much time does it take to migrate, and how easy it is to migrate from SharePoint on-prem databases to SharePoint and cloud? And the third one, what is the backup story for SharePoint and cloud?
Quickly, scalability-wise, you don't have limits. So the way you want to go as many as number of servers, go ahead. Whatever is available, and you need to follow our performance guidelines on the on-premise environment, same applies to this. It's a little bit tweaks you have to do. I'll answer the backup question, then I'll pass on to Lynn for the migration time. Backup is normal backup, it's a SQL, right, ultimately. SharePoint backup you want to do, you can do on a VM, okay? If you want to do a SQL backup, you have a better option. SQL, 2012, now there's a plugin available which can actually directly backup to blob. Instead of a VM, it can directly backup to blob. That is integrated in the 2014, but 2012 that comes as. So you can use that. And third question is. You have to follow. So that is generally say you will do that. Whether you want to do like full backup, differential backup, and T-log backup, right? That strategy you follow. That tools, whenever you do a backup, it intercepts, and instead of doing to a file, it will do a blob. Okay, if you want to go to item level recovery, right? Whatever features are available in SharePoint, the recycle bin, the same are available. You want to use GPM, go ahead and use GPM. That is also available on Azure. And migration time. Wow.
So we had 1.5 months for the migration of this module from on-prem to cloud, actually, it's including the testing time, including the performance testing time, and we did it in 1.5 months. It was very hard. From the development standpoint, I think
we were about 10 developers, because we were also optimizing in terms of the code base that we had. So it was a lot of the code was like really outdated. We were also doing some amount of re-engineering and also giving new authoring experiences. So yeah, it was about 10 developers.
So what do you want, book or back? You had a question, right? So when you say hybrid, can you elaborate? In SharePoint itself, we do not recommend a stretch farm. What we call as a stretch farm, that few servers of the same farm in one location and few in other. In on-premise environment, we support it less than 1 millisecond, this thing. However, from Azure to hybrid, no, not recommended, it wouldn't be supported. Go ahead. So you can, okay, first of all, there are two things. One is just users from UK to India. So this is two different farms, right? Okay, so that is okay, it will work. However, for installing SharePoint, it is always recommended have a local domain controller. Okay, so you should have a domain controller in the UK and so that there is not enough latency, otherwise you will have a lot of issues. So have it in this thing. I'll give you the back. Go ahead, and last question. Yeah. Actually, it would depend on what is the service. For example, Traffic Manager is only available for a cloud service. So if you have a SharePoint farm on-premise, it is not in a cloud service, you wouldn't be able to use a Traffic Manager. When it comes to media services, yes, media services is just a URL, and it would just work. So actually, and Azure Active Directory also would work. So it depends, Visual Studio Online will also work. I think whatever services I mentioned there, other than Traffic Manager, I think most of this would work. Someone from this side, yeah, we can. Okay, let me repeat the question first. Let me repeat the question and let him reply. So the question is, they saw a lot of third-party products like Trend Micro, Symantec, in this thing. Aren't those features available in Azure? Go ahead.
It's available now, actually. When we went live 9 months back, it was not available. That's why we use these third-party products. Now everything is available now. Even for, you need not use firewall for tiering, you can use NSGs, basically. So instead of Trend Micro firewall, you can use NSG for instead of Trend Micro for SIEM, control is a different Azure SIEM solution, and that's it.
Sorry. So all this, okay. So this, if you want to use these appliances, right? Now also mostly they were running on some hardware. So these appliances are also available in Azure. For example, anti malware, right? You can use Symantec that Infosys used because they had an enterprise agreement with them. But you can use Microsoft Anti-Malware, which is free. For a host-level firewall, we have something called Windows Firewall, which comes free with Windows. But they wanted some advanced features which were available in Trend Micro, so they went with that. So it depends on feature comparison of different products. A lot of things are available. Some things are also not available. For example, anywhere even for on-premise environment, Portal Protect is not even available from Microsoft. We used to have 4.4 SharePoint, 4.4 protection for SharePoint. We have kind of obsolete that this thing, so it's not available in on-premise environment. We have to go with a third-party product. Yeah.
So it is a migration from WAS 2007 to 2010 and then to 2013 because there is no direct migration to 2013 which is available. Okay. What is your next question? So it's a migration.
It's not a new cycle.
We took the same content database and then upgraded that.
I'll answer that. So, public site and office, and whatever was available, was not a full-fledged SharePoint. It had very limited features, even at that time. Yeah. So, that was the reason it was never considered for infrastructure.
Yeah. Yeah. One about that, we need a lot of customization, actually, that was not.
Yeah.
We were not able to do that customization on both these two parties.
No.
Yeah.
Not for
instance. So just a minute. So there's another part that is a good question. What happens to extranet? And when you say extranet, what do you mean? For customers? And customers, what kind of authentication do you allow? FBA? If it is ADFS, you can go with either Office 365 or this thing based on other considerations. If it's FBA, which is a SQL Server based this thing, then again you need a custom membership provider which is not allowed in Office 365, and you will have to go with the Azure solution. Yes. Most of these things, whatever you said, should apply here. So, you had some question in the back, right?
So, Shweta has mentioned that actually. So, the question was we have express route between data centers from Infosys to Azure. She has mentioned as part of the new re-engineering piece, as of now we have an SGS VPN route. It's from our data center into the Azure Cloud data center. We are replacing it with the express route. Express route is something like an MPLS cloud, basically. Yeah, there are two ways of doing express route actually. So you can use exchange provider, or you can have your own express route MPLS provider basically. And there are AT&T, BT, there are a lot of parties providers.
There is a session I think tomorrow by Lakshmi and Paul. Go to that. That's primarily on express route. You had a question, yeah. Office Web Apps and Exchange. Exchange doesn't have any much relationship with SharePoint unless you're using that data discovery features. But Office Web Apps, if you're integrating, I would suggest have it in the same data center. Yes, absolutely. If you're doing Office 365, it's Azure. If you're using Office, that's Azure Active Directory. There's nothing else. Yeah, go ahead. So performance is always based on some data, right? So for example, Infosys.com is the internet site. And on top of that, we had a CDN. So we didn't worry much about what people requested. We did a lot of worry about what is the payload of a page. So a lot of factors, right? There's a lot of optimization done on the payload. But from a SQL Server side, we were a little okay because we were caching most of the stuff. But as I told, collaboration scenarios and intranet scenarios are high IOPS oriented. So first consider Office 365 when premium storage comes, go with that. Sorry? Yeah, that is more on a payload. That is one thing I just wanted to highlight, whatever they covered about security, right? It just doesn't apply to SharePoint. If you're deploying any kind of a public facing website, even on WebSphere or WordPress or something, a lot of that also applies same to other websites which are there on internet. Yeah, go ahead. After moving to what? Okay. There are multiple ways to do that. If your search is on-premise, SharePoint 2013 only. you can use the hybrid search which Office 365 provides, and you can have either interlaced search results or you can have a different tab for premise and all that. But you can have other things. So before I take another question, just I think we have a break after that. So how long we have to be in this room? No one is there. Okay. I think I'll take. I'm not sure if there's anyone in the other rooms. They can come down if there are any. I'll go ahead. Yeah, someone had a question here. Yeah.
It's the same. Because we are using IaaS, so it's the same as any managing any VMs.
Yeah.
We are using UDFS. We have a different domain. We have a different domain for SharePoint actually. And we are using service account of that domain for SharePoint. And we are using UDFS from the on-prem. We are 80% UDFS AWS proxy setup, which channels the authentication for the monthly Infosys employees. Yes, we have the private and the failover side across geo actually.
ये लाइट बंद किया कि बंद हुआ है?
बंद किया है। अगर ना बंद करना बंद कर लो, शूटिंग चालू है। कैसे लोग इसका लोग पढ़ा लेता हूँ तो वो मिले। चालू है ना?
फोन तो चालू है।
चला कर।